Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, August 1st, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to try to assemble a group top five list of M. Night Shyamalan's movies. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
And editor and chief film critic Chris Evangelista.
Hi.
All right, so we did an X-Men movie ranking last week, and we're going to try to use basically the same approach here. So Trap, M. Night Shyamalan's new movie, will not be considered because we'll be devoting tomorrow's episode to that film. So, I guess similar to the way that we started the X-Men ranking, I move to make a motion that we should probably strike Praying with Anger and Wide Awake from the record here, because I've not seen these movies. I think a lot of people don't even know that M. Night Shyamalan made these movies before The Sixth Sense. I don't think Jacob has seen these movies. Chris, have you seen these?
I have. They're not good, so I'm fine with us not talking about them.
Okay. Yeah, for all intents and purposes, I think it was like very much like a purposeful marketing kind of thing. The Sixth Sense was like essentially marketed as his breakout debut type of movie. So it probably makes sense for us to start there. So how do you guys want to do this? Should we list all of his movies before we go through them? What do you think we should do here?
Yeah, Ben, how about you get off the whole list of what's properly going to be in discussion here? Then I have a discussion to get us started. At least I have an idea to get us started. You guys can say yes or no to it.
Okay, cool. All right, so I'll just go in order from oldest to newest. The Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, The Village, Lady in the Water, The Happening, The Last Airbender, After Earth, The Visit, Split, Glass, Old, and Knock at the Cabin. So what do you think, Jacob?
All right, here's my thoughts for some quick, easy cuts here. M. Night Shyamalan is a weird filmmaker. Like, for a while, I was unsure how I felt about him. He's made some masterpieces and some real stinkers, but he's weird. He makes movies that are so specifically him, and, like, nobody else feels like him. Like, so many of his bad movies are just so infused with his quirks and his interests. Even if they're bad, I'm like, man, that was bad, but at least it was M. Night doing his thing. But it's not true of two of his films. The two films where he really strayed from being him and derailed his career in a major way with two giant bombs, The Last Airbender and After Earth, have none of his personality, none of his quirks. They're phoned in paycheck gigs, and they're not his worst movies. I think there's one solicit. I think he's actually worse, makes me angrier. But at least the film in question there is him through and through and through and through. Whereas After Earth and Last Airbender are just nothing. I think we cut these two instantly.
I think it would be totally deranged for us to have either of those movies in a top five list of M. Night Shyamalan's films, so I'm totally fine with that. Chris, do you have anything to say about either Last Airbender or After Earth?
No, I'm fine with this, and I agree with Jacob. They're very much not, quote-unquote, his movies. I remember specifically, like, when After Earth came out, he had fallen so far that his name wasn't, like, even in the marketing. Like, there were, like... You know, there was a period there where every time a movie of his came out, his name was slapped all over the trailers, like an M. Night Shyamalan film. And After Earth came out, they deliberately went out of their way to hide him because he had like fallen so far. And like now thankfully he's back. You know, he had his comeback, and they're back to putting his name all over the trailers again. But yeah, those two films very much feel like a Jacob said, paycheck gigs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember the movie he produced, Devil, the one location film set in an elevator, which is actually a good movie. The trailers leaned hard on his name, and all these videos went viral of when like the trailers said like an M. Night Shyamalan experience, or like from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan, even though he didn't direct it, audiences are bursting into laughter.
Yeah.
And we can talk about this more in greater depth, but I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that an unmistakably weird-ass filmmaker had a string of massive hits. Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs were all huge. The Village was a hit, but less so. But Lady in the Water and The Happening dragged him down in such a way, and those movies have their charms, but it's just an example of what happens when people realize in slow motion that a guy who's making blockbusters was also weird. Like and modern Shyamalan is so weird, and I'm glad he's back. I'm glad his movies are making money again. They're not as huge as Sixth Sense was financially, or you know, as huge as Signs was. But we saw in real time what happened when somebody who marched to his own drummer in a very unique way, when the mainstream discovered that and lashed out. And I can't think of another situation like in modern cinema where that's happened like that.
I'm trying to rack my brain, and yeah, it feels pretty unique. I mean, his sort of rise and fall and then re-rise again, I'm sure there have been filmmakers in the past, like especially going back into like whatever the 30s and 40s and stuff, that have had ebbs and flows because they made so many movies. But considering the fact that he's made, what is it? I don't know, approximately 12 movies or whatever. I haven't actually counted all these that are listed out in front of us.
17, if I'm counting correctly on my list.
17. Okay. Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. There's a really fascinating arc to his career that seems definitely unusual. Chris, I'm curious, because I think you're probably the biggest M. Night Shyamalan fan of all three of us on this show. Do you agree with Jacob's assessment that Knight is like a really odd movie maker?
He's very strange. He makes very strange movies, especially like recently. I feel like his films have gotten, I don't want to keep saying the word strange, but they've gotten very like quirky in a way. Like the dialogue is delivered in this very like precise way. It doesn't flow like normal speech. Like something about the way he films dialogue and the way he has his actors deliver dialogue. Like it's very direct. He's very fond of stealing this thing that Jonathan Demme used to do, where characters talk directly to the camera, and it's almost like they're talking directly to the audience, and that makes you, it sort of like throws you off kilter. Like I haven't seen Trap, but you can even, it's like in the trailers for Trap, where like Josh Hartnett is looking like directly into the, like it's a trick he like borrowed whole scale from Jonathan Demme, and I feel like that's very, it's so direct that it like unnerves you in a way, because we're not used to that. As like we're trained to watch movies a certain way, and when characters, it's almost like they're breaking the fourth wall. And I don't mean in like the shitty Deadpool way. I mean like in a different sort of like like just like you're not used to that. And I don't know. There's something about that and the way he just shoots action. I mean, he's very, sounds like a stupid thing, but he's visual in a way that a lot of modern filmmakers are not. It's almost like a classic sort of visual stylist way that he shoots his action.
I say this as a compliment, but there's a veneer of artificiality to his worlds that I think don't work in films like The Happening, but weirdly work really well in films like Old. And it doesn't, I don't know, like there's a genuine stylization to his dialogue, and his films are framed in such specific ways. His visuals call attention to themselves in ways that I think work. He's not a naturalistic filmmaker. Every single thing about his movies, from the way he puts the camera to ways people speak to the way the dialogue is written, is heavily stylized, and it doesn't always work. And I think we kind of didn't see it. It was a bit more invisible in his first couple of movies. But you go back and watch Signs. I rewatched Signs a few days ago. That movie rips. And all the weird stuff that we talk about now from Old and Knock at the Cabin and Split, it's still there in Signs. We just didn't know it at the time. I love this guy. Even his bad movies, I love this guy. I'm excited for even a bad M. Night movie these days.
I'm going to spoil one tiny thing about the interview that we're going to play with M. Night Shyamalan on tomorrow's episode of the podcast, just because I think it's relevant to the conversation we're having now. Jeremy Mathai, who did the interview, asked him about basically like including humor and stuff like that in his movies. And he said, I did a lot of humor in, let's say, Stuart Little or Signs. Signs was probably the one that I added the most humor to up till that point, but it's my instinct now. And from The Visit on, I've added it into everything. I think nervous laughter is a really fun thing. And because we go to see the movies in the theater together, it's so joyous to hear everybody laughing. And then that turns into gasps, and that turns into screams and applause, hopefully. That's the end of his quote. But I think imagining or thinking of his movies with The Visit as like a specific turning point in his career. I mean, it certainly was financially and like critically and all of that. That was the movie that kind of brought him back from that fall that we talked about earlier. But for him creatively to say that was the movie, you know, from then on, I think that's where you can start to feel that strangeness really, really permeating his movies. And I think specifically it's in the dialogue. It's the way that these characters talk in that sort of like, I don't know, almost like stilted way, a very stylized way.
Yeah, it's like heightened. It's like, it's not, like I said, it's like not how people talk. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, we're not used to it. Like we're used to like, he talks like people talk, you know, he goes out of his way to make it stand out. And I just think it's like a matter of like just what we're used to as filmgoers, because a lot of movies today are sort of cut and paste in a way. They're like they follow a rigid formula, and he actually sort of seems to like push back against that, which again makes his movies just stand out more, even when they don't work. They're like they're different in a way that makes them unique, and that's mm-hmm. why I appreciate it so much.
Okay. Yeah.
With that said, because I think we all like M. Night here, we all genuinely like and appreciate him and value him, so that's why I think we need to cut the worst film of his that is actually a proper M. Night movie. We need to cut Glass from his list. Glass is bad. It's just Glass is heartbreakingly bad.
Yeah.
We were talking about this in Slack the other day, and just like the amount of disappointment that I felt with Glass is because there was like such an unusual buildup to that movie. It just seemed like such an unlikely film to come at that point in his career. And as this sort of like almost secret sequel to one of his earlier beloved movies, and like, oh my God, all the pieces are finally coming together for this thing that like we didn't even really think that we needed or wanted, but like, wow, this is happening. It's being served up to us on a silver platter. And then the end result was just like so kind of emotionally crushing for me anyway, I'm totally fine cutting this one. What do you think about Glass, Chris?
It's bad. It really broke my heart, because and I said this in my review of Glass, and I kind of feel bad for saying it because it makes me look like an asshole, but I'm proud to say, like, I've stuck in M. Night's corner for years. Like, even when everyone gave up on him, I was defending him. Like, people, like, The Village is where, like, the downward swing started. And I will get to this, but I love The Village. I really like The Happening. I don't even mean, like, in an ironic way. I think it's just, like, a fun B-movie. So when everyone was like, he's lost it, I was like, no, he's still got it. And then I saw, and then when his comeback happened, I was so excited, because I was like, yeah, see, he still got it. And then I watched Glass and I was like, have I been wrong this entire time? Like, maybe he doesn't have it anymore, because just everything about that movie is just a misfire from like almost beginning to end. And it's like shockingly weird how much he whiffs it. Like, I just... And, like, I don't know how much of it has to do with the fact that, like, we know now that like Bruce Willis, I don't know, I forget what the condition he has, but Bruce Willis is not well. So like maybe that contributes to it, part of like how much he could do with Bruce Willis in the movie. But like, it's so like a, it almost like ruins Unbreakable. Like, because Unbreakable is so good. Like, I revisited that recently because it got a new 4K release and I watched it and I was like, God damn, this is such a good movie. And Glass is like, everything you liked about Unbreakable, what if I ruined it? Like, what if I drowned the main character of Unbreakable in a puddle in a parking lot? Like, like, really? That's what you want to do here? Like, oh my God. Like,
I like how that's literally what happens. That's literally what happens in the movie, but it sounds like you're making a metaphor.
It sounds like it sounds like a joke, but that's literally what happens. Bruce Willis drowns in a puddle parking lot and the movie ends. I was like, what the fuck? So it's depressing. It's so depressing. And I would say, like, if we're cutting Last Airbender and After Earth, like, Glass is definitely the worst of those of the movies.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get rid of that. So now we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 left. So Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, The Village, Lady in the Water, The Happening, The Visit, Split, Old, and Knock at the Cabin.
Can I make a suggestion for something we put into our top five instantly?
Yes.
All right. I kind of want to talk about these movies one at a time, so that's why I'm not saying like we should move this chunk up right now. But I think Signs is one of the best blockbusters ever made. I remember the electricity in that theater, the scares landing, the humor landing. People can nitpick it all they want. I think the nitpicks about like why would aliens who are afraid who can't deal with water invade a water planet is misses the forest for the trees in a major way. It is that weird mix of M. Night's horror filmmaking chops with his weird spiritualism, with his corniness, with his humor. The Mel Gibson of it aside, I mean, he's so freaking good in this movie, which makes me angry at Mel Gibson's a good actor because fuck that guy. But Signs is my favorite M. Night movie. I think it's just an absolute masterclass of an auteur-driven blockbuster, and I could watch this thing on a loop. And every time I revisit it, I think it's not going to recapture what I felt in 2003. It's not going to recapture how scared and excited and how much I was laughing seeing that movie in my teens. Every time I watch it, and I watched it again last week, it is so good. Signs is in top five.
Swing away. I would definitely sign off on putting this up there. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I would say so. Signs is a delightful movie. It's just, it's very funny, like, which I love about it. Like, everyone is like firing on, like, I've talked about this before, but like, I'm not big on like child actors. Like, a lot of times they like just like, they like make my skin crawl like child actors, but like the child actors in this are so good. They're like, M. Night is very good at directing children, and he does a really good job at this, like getting what he needs out of them. Like, they're never like grating or annoying. They just seem like real people. And Mel Gibson, you know, great in this movie. Joaquin Phoenix even better, and he and Mel Gibson actually play off each other really well. Like, it's a shame Mel Gibson is a piece of shit, because I'd love to see another like Mel Gibson Joaquin Phoenix movie, because they actually play off each other well. I think we forget that Joaquin Phoenix can be funny, because he's like gotten to this point in his career where he's playing a lot of like serious characters, and he can be very funny. He's like very funny in this movie, and I know he's in the Joker movies, but he's not funny in those movies. So like, it'd be great if someone would let him be funny again.
Yeah, he had some moments of humor in Napoleon, but it's an entirely different style of performance. It feels like a different actor, the Joaquin Phoenix that was in Signs versus the one that is in all of these movies, you know, in the past, whatever, call it 10 years even.
Yeah.
It just, he feels like something changed in him, and he became like a totally different performer. But yeah, it's really fascinating to go back and rewatch Signs and think about, I don't know, maybe just like a different direction that his career could have gone in if he had decided to sort of stay in that lane of performance style. And, you know, he's, for lack of a better term, just kind of like a relatively normal character, you know, like just kind of like he feels like a normal guy. And like, it's very rare now to think of Joaquin Phoenix as a normal guy in movies. Sometimes it happens. I like Come On is probably the closest recent example, but yeah, it just feels like unusual for him these days. So
I just want to say that his reaction to the birthday party footage in Silence, that the combination of that reveal and the cut to his close-up, That for me outranks I See Dead People as the greatest moment in M. Night Shyamalan's filmography. I think that is the summation of his strengths as a filmmaker. I mean,
wow.
I strongly believe that that scene is it.
It's great. I mean, it's been seared in my memory. Like, I haven't rewatched Signs in years, but you just saying those words, like the exact imagery, it pops into my head. So it's very palpable and sort of a sticky image, I guess, in that way. But
speaking of Joaquin Phoenix, sorry to rail on you, Ben. I have an excellent segue. I have a great segue.
Okay, go for it.
Joaquin Phoenix doing a very different work in The Village, a film that I'm actually pretty low key on. I'm not a big Village fan, but I know that Chris, is it your favorite M. Night? And I know it's up there for you.
It is my favorite M. Night movie. For a while, I would probably have said like Unbreakable might have been, but at this point, it's definitely, I think The Village is my favorite M. Night movie. It's just like, it's so good. I know people don't love it. I feel like the tide has changed a little bit. I feel like people like it a little bit more, but I remember when it came out, people were not happy with it. And part of that has to do with how it was marketed. It was marketed as like a full-blown horror movie, and it's not that at all. It's a lot subtler. It's a lot more subtle than that. It's a lot more introspective than that. It's like a quiet drama that happens to have spooky stuff in it, and I don't think people were in the mood for that. So I don't know, but I get why people don't like it, but I just love this movie from top to bottom. I love the cast. Bryce Dallas Howard, this is like her first movie, and she is so good in it. Like, I'm sad that like she hasn't done much high quality work, for lack of a better term. Like, she's in the Jurassic movies, like they're not good. She's an Argyle, like she deserves better. She's a better actor than I think people give her credit for. If you like, you watch her in this, she's so good. Like, mm-hmm. It's like a revelation. Like, she's so good in this movie. Joaquin Phoenix is so good in it. I do think the Adrian Brody subplot is a little not great. The way it handles like that character, it's not the best representation of that. But if you can like sort of get beyond that, the cinematography is just gorgeous. Like, the whole movie, it looks like a painting. Mm-hmm. The score by James Newton Howard, and he has a violinist named Hilary Hahn, does all the violin work. It's just like one of my favorite film scores of all time. It's just beautiful and haunting. And it's just like this almost like swooningly romantic movie. And he hasn't really made a movie this romantic since, honestly. I don't know if he'll ever do it again. Like, it's just like this like sweeping romantic melodrama that happens to have quote unquote monsters in it. And I don't mm-hmm. know, something about it just works so well for me.
Yeah, I love it. When I think of like autumnal vibes in cinema, The Village perfectly encapsulates, you know, like that sort of northeastern, you know, the seasons changing, leaves changing colors, like that whole thing. Like, the look of this movie is incredible, on top of everything else that you said. I'm a big, big fan of The Village as well. So, Jacob, even though you're kind of like, I don't know, more of a quiet supporter, would you be okay with slotting this into the top five? Oh, yeah. You think it belongs there? Okay.
Even though this isn't my choice, it probably wouldn't make my top five, but it I celebrate that this movie has an audience and that it is so unique. I think that part of me, this is so dumb. The first trailer for The Village is one of the best trailers ever made, and it missells the movie in such a profound way. Every time I watch The Village, I think, this is really good, but I want to see the movie that first trailer was selling. Mm-hmm. Which is incredibly unfair, but it is a very good movie. But it sounds like, so if Signs is my favorite and The Village is Chris's favorite, Ben, what's your favorite movie? Like, is there anything on this list that you would want to bump up immediately?
I mean, The Village is probably the one where my heart is the most, but I think The Sixth Sense, like, I know, I realize it's like the most basic opinion to have, but The Sixth Sense is just a fucking great movie. And it's just incredible. It's as good as, you know, everybody has said it's been for the past 25 years. And it's just an unbelievable piece of movie making, you know, and for somebody who had directed a couple of really small films before that, it's just a gigantic step up into, you know, just like classical mainstream American storytelling made for adults. It's exactly the type of thing that we talk about that doesn't really happen very much anymore. It's not based on anything. It's just this incredible, unique, singular experience that has an incredible Bruce Willis performance, an amazing Haley Joel Osment performance. I mean, like, Toni Collette is like lights out in this movie. It's just a like a true American classic, I think. So it seems kind of silly to have that, you know, almost like, yeah, too basic to have that as my number one. But I think that's probably where my head's at. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, it's a masterpiece. Like, that's not, I try not to throw around the M word too much, but this film, like, I don't know how our younger listeners may not realize how much this film shook the zeitgeist to its core when it came out. This is what everybody talked about. And everyone talked about the twist. And the miracle of The Sixth Sense is that the twist is amazing and it recontextualizes the whole movie. But you go back and rewatch it, it's not a film that's diminished by knowing that going in. Knowing what happens at the end makes this a better film. You can appreciate how it's structured and how it's built and how the reveals come together. It's a different movie once you know the twist, but it's not a worse one. And so many films that are twist-driven, you know, once you know, oh, everything's not as it seems, it falls apart. And it's not The Sixth Sense. It is such a full-fledged, three-dimensional, emotionally fulfilling film that happens to have a really damn fine twist at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just that there's such a sense of melancholy going through the movie, too, that's like really, really strong and just kind of unusual for movies like this. But I don't know, Chris, do you have any Sixth Sense thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I almost want to like echo everything Jacob said, but like, even if you like knowing the twist actually makes it like a better movie, it makes, because M. Night does a really good job playing by the rules. He's like, he's not cheating. Like, the twist isn't like a lot of times a big twist like that, and a lot of movies that came out after Sixth Sense tried to like sort of mimic big twist endings, and they're cheating. And this movie does a really good job of playing by the, like, if you go back and you pay attention, you can see like no one else is interacting with Bruce Willis, and the way he's like, he's always wearing the same clothes and stuff like that. It's like, it's subtle. It's not like in your face, but if you go back and rewatch it, it almost makes it a stronger movie. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a well-made film from like the first like hour or so doesn't really clue you into the fact that it's about ghosts. Like, everyone knows it's about ghosts, 'cause that's like all the marketing was like, it's a ghost movie, but it's almost like this like quiet drama, and then it's like, oh, by the way, this movie is about ghosts, and it's like, what? Like, that's it's handled so well, and it's so like the ghost stuff is like genuinely like creepy. I feel like this movie doesn't get enough credit for being like actually scary in a way. Like, it's like everyone thinks of it as this like sad drama, and it is, but it has like genuinely like scary stuff in it. It does really well playing with your emotions in a really like non cheap way. It's not like a jump scare movie. It's mm-hmm. like, it like builds up this emotional connection, 'cause you end up growing to really care about these characters. And that is a testament to the performances, really. Like, this is probably like this and Unbreakable, I think, are like two of Bruce Willis's like best performances. And like yes, you know, he got popular for like Moonlighting and Die Hard, where he's playing this sort of like wisecracking smartass, but he's so reserved in these two movies. He's so quiet and sad, and it's like, wow, he's like so good at this. Like, he spent so many years playing like a smartass that we kind of missed out at Bruce Willis, the very serious actor, in a way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that stillness, I think, is another defining characteristic of his work with M. Night Shyamalan, and that carries over into Unbreakable as well. You guys want to talk about that one next?
Unbreakable is the fourth one on this list for sure. Like, the final battle here will be for the fifth slot. Because Signs, The Village, Sixth Sense, and Unbreakable are locked in for this top five. I think we all agree on that, right?
I think so, yeah.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet,
including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need to work quickly and confidently, you need Grammarly. It's a trusted AI writing partner that helps you get work done faster with better writing. And it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said. Done.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Okay, so yeah, here's where, so this could get interesting because we have not only one more movie to lock in, but then the order of which they should go. And I think that's where maybe some funkiness could happen. But I'm so curious because, Jacob, I feel your energy. I feel you wanting to like throw a wrench into this and like do something insane just for the sake of like entertainment on this list. I don't know if that's actually real, but that's just I can see a twinkle in your eye, even though we're not recording over video right now. So I don't know. Do you have anything in mind of like some sort of hot take or like wild, unexpected choice that you want to try to go to bat for here?
No, let me think on this because the remaining movies are such wild cards. Like, how the hell do you even talk about Old and The Happening in the same sentence? I don't know. Can we just dwell for a second on why Unbreakable is in top five? Because Unbreakable, I think it's so good. And I think it's about 15 years ahead of its time in terms of what it's reacting to and the story it's telling. And I think M. Night saw the future in a weird way and made the serious grounded superhero movie that would become like the bread and butter 10 years later. And he did it better than everybody else.
It's also like crazy how much of a bait and switch this movie was, because I don't know if you guys remember this, but like the marketing, the trailers did not hint that this was about comic books or superheroes at all. Like the trailers played with the fact that like Bruce Willis's character survived a train crash. It's like, that was the selling point. Like the trailer was literally like that whole scene where he's in the hospital and the doctor's like, you're the only one who survived this crash and you don't have a scratch on you. Like, that's how the movie was sold.
And I remember the trailer was incredible.
It was so good. And I remember I saw this the Friday it came out with a group of friends. And the beginning of the movie has like a title card where it's talking about comic books. And my one friend next to me was like, is this about comic books? And I was like, I don't know. I didn't expect that at all. And the movie was literally about that. And it was so unexpected. And but God, what a great movie. Like Bruce Willis is so good in this. And the movie takes comic books serious in a way that like, I don't even take them serious. Like I don't care about comic books, but the movie makes you care about them in a way that like, even if you're not like a comic, like a fan, like I've read comics, but I'm not like a comic book guy, but like it makes you appreciate them as the sort of art form in a way that like it's just crazy to think he got away with that. I don't know. Like, especially like ahead of like the big superhero boom. Like, it's just like, it's so strange that like he sort of predicted that.
4 years before Batman Begins, 4 years before Christopher Nolan modernized the idea of taking this stuff seriously. And I think that, you know, culture overdid it. We started taking this stuff too seriously. Whereas, and it just made comic books a lot less fun for a while. But Shyamalan walks this line, and this film is, goodness, I bring back where we used earlier. It's still like, it's so patient with this material and trusts you to want to be interested in it. And it never wants to like slam you over the head. It just wants to slowly draw you into this really compelling mystery of what if the superhero was real? That's a question that's been asked so many times and by so many filmmakers to such a lesser degree over the past 20 years that it's remarkable how well this film addresses that question, how seriously it takes it, and how much juice it draws from it. What a great movie.
Mm-hmm. And it's so, like, we used this before in another movie, but it's such a melancholy, sad movie in this like way that I think is like almost like disarming. Like, both the main characters are characters who just don't understand their place in the world. And Bruce Willis has this line here where, when he first meets with Samuel Jackson character, he's like, "Today was the first day I woke up and didn't feel sadness," because he thought Samuel Jackson was going to have answers for him. And like, just that, the way he delivers that line is so like wrenching in a way where it's like that thought of like, this guy just wakes up every day and he just feels this sort of loneliness because he's not doing what he should be doing. And what he should be doing is, you know, being a superhero, which is like a silly thing on the surface, but the movie plays it completely straight and serious. And it's this like sort of emptiness these characters have that you feel like you really relate to both of these characters, even the Samuel L. Jackson character who is, you know, revealed in the big twist to be the super villain. Like, you, this is the reason I hate Glass so much, because it robs this movie of that power of these characters having this like loneliness and the way they sort of need each other. And Glass sort of just like throws it out the window and is like, "Wouldn't it be funny if blah blah blah?" I'm like, get out of here. Mm-hmm. So like, I just love the way, like, I will say, as much as I love Unbreakable, that final title cards where it's like David Dunn called the police, it's like, ugh, I really wish that was not in the movie. It's so bad. It's
against Shyamalan's will, though. He that was a studio note, unfortunately.
Yeah, I fully, you know, I accept that, but I like, when I rewatch the movie, I actually like turn it off before those title cards pop up, because it robs the movie of so much power. It's like, now he's in a hospital for the criminally insane. Like, God, we did not need that. We did not need that at all.
I'm just looking at this list and I'm thinking of Unbreakable and the pool scene in that movie, and then thinking about Lady in the Water, and then thinking about Old and how water seems to be this recurring
and Signs with the aliens. The,
yeah, of course. Yeah. I wonder if there's, do you guys know if like M. Night Shyamalan has some sort of like personal trauma associated to water or something? Like, that seems like a motif that recurs throughout a lot of his movies.
Oh, it's like Mike Flanagan in Hands. I don't know. It's interesting.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll have to look into that. Okay. So yeah, we've got these four locked. Can we not put The Happening in the top five? I know that, like, you know, Chris likes it unironically, but,
yeah, I would not expect it to be in the top five, but I will say I love The Happening. It's so much fun. There's a guy who just feeds himself to lions nonchalantly. It's so much fun. entire scene about hot dogs, like it's great. I love it.
I have one very important question for you about this.
Okay,
why are you eyeing my lemon drink?
Oh God, I love that. I love that entire ending with Mrs. Jones, who's just like this insane woman. Like, just get out of there. Like,
The Helping is not good, but it's the kind of bad Shyamalan I like. This is not bad. This is not Glass. It is just a guy who's not being told no, indulging in all of his worst habits in ways that I find so fascinating. The Happening is not top five, but man, I'm glad it exists. Wahlberg is terrible. Deschanel is terrible in this movie. They have no chemistry. It's amazing.
It's so much fun, though. Like, I feel like a lot of people would like The Happening if they went back and rewatched it. And again, I don't want to say like in an ironic way. Just like, have fun with it, because I genuinely feel like he was trying to have fun with the movie, and everyone was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. I feel like you could probably say the same thing about Lady in the Water. And even Jacob, you know, your comment about a director who was not being told no, that's what Lady in the Water feels like. I mean, this is a story based on nighttime stories that he would tell his kids, right, before they went to sleep. And he just turned it into a movie. And like,
it's also a movie where he casts himself as a writer who will save the world. It's I actually, like, of all his movies, this is the one I have revisited the least, and I kind of want to rewatch it now and see if I would like it a lot more, because I did not love it when it came out. But
yeah,
Giamatti is so good in it. Paul Giamatti is honestly doing Bruce Willis in Unbreakable level work here. It's just the movie surrounding him is so up its own butt. I mean, this is where Shyamalan, I mean, I usually think pretentious is a word people throw around as a criticism without care or acknowledging what it actually means. This is a pretentious film from a filmmaker who very loudly broke up with his first studio who made his first films because they tried to say, maybe rethink this one. Then he just burned all the bridges as loudly as he could to make this movie. And it's like, wow. It's really kind of incredible that the behind the scenes story of this movie, because this is the start of the decline, his mid-career slump before he bounced back with, you know, low-budget horror stuff, because a lot of people rightfully said, no, man, you can't make this movie. And he made it anyway with a different studio who was hungry to get in on the guy who made The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable. And it's such an act of folly. I admire it. I'm glad it exists. There's even a Sci-Fi Channel fake documentary that tried to hype up the mythology of what if M.H. Shyamalan is actually supernatural, if I remember correctly.
There was a whole book, really. It was called, like, The Man Who Hears Voices, and it's all about, like, the making of this movie, and it's supposed to be, like, yeah, maybe he's crazy. Like, okay. Whatever you say.
So, that's my long way of saying that The Lady in the Water is utterly fascinating. I can talk about this movie all day. It's not good. It's not top five.
Like, yeah. I'll take a failed big swing over 90% of what Hollywood produces today. Like, even if I don't think this is a good movie, at least it's like, it's, at least it's got a vision. Like, that vision is flawed and silly, but give me a filmmaker who's trying something over, like, just a guy replicating junk, you know? Like, yeah. That's what I want.
Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like we can kick Lady in the Water back to the seas from whence it came. Okay, so we have The Visit, Split, Old, and Knock at the Cabin vying for our fifth slot here. Do we want to do like a battle royale of what we think should go in here? Personally, I feel like Split goes in here. I feel like James McAvoy is just unreal in that movie, and the secret connection that it had to the Unbreakable universe at the very end of the movie, I know, was enough to probably like catapult it into the top five for, you know, hardcore fans of Shyamalan who are not on this podcast, but like that was a culture defining moment for a lot of people. That was like one of the best cinematic surprises, you know, if you made a list or something like that. The ending of Split would probably be on there for a lot of people. I think even if you take that away, Split still belongs on this list just because it's so, I don't know, man. It's just a really, really good movie. And that McAvoy performance is just incredible. So I feel like that alone sort of elevates it above the other stuff, which are interesting movies. But what do you guys think?
I'll be that guy when it comes to Split. I was in the very first audience to ever see Split. At Fantastic Fest, there was a secret screening. They brought Shyamalan there. They didn't even announce what it was going to be beforehand. They literally rolled the movie without even announcing it, which they don't always do with secret screenings. And The Visit had come out, and The Visit had been a success. Not a huge success, but a success. But it's not a movie that everybody saw. It was not like such a huge hit that like everybody was back at the M. Night train. And when the credits started rolling, and it said an M. Night Shyamalan film, you could feel the secret screening audience deflate. Like there, you could genuinely feel like the, from a lot of people who were like, because getting those secret screenings at film festivals is tough. And you had to fight for it sometimes, wait in long lines and maneuver your way through it. And people were just not there. And this is before there was a trailer for Split. We didn't know what it was about. We didn't know who was in it. We just knew that it was a new movie. And M.H. Shyamalan's name was there in the opening credits. And man, what a great screening. You could feel the audience turn around in real time with that movie and get outside. And when that Bruce Willis reveal came at the end, like the electricity in the room was absolutely stunning. And I cannot emotionally separate myself from that experience. It was one of the great screenings of my life. And not knowing anything about that movie, like not knowing that McAvoy was in it, not knowing the plot of it, not knowing the Bruce Willis reveal, and just realizing M. Night was back, baby, was one of the most fun things I've ever had as a moviegoer. So I already support this being the last one on the list, but I also have to acknowledge that, yes, that screening is inseparable from me talking about this movie. So,
what do you think, Chris?
Man, I don't know. I have a fun Split story, too. I saw Split on the day that Donald Trump was inaugurated as the president of the United States, because at the time I was working in an office and 90% of those people were Trump fans. And I was like, I don't want to be here when all these people are like celebrating this. So I took the day off from work and I went and saw Split in the theater to get away from the horrors of the world. But Split is a lot of fun. It's James McAvoy is so good in this. Anya Taylor-Joy is really good in this, playing this sort of like very damaged character. The movie is very much about damaged people. And M. Night knows exactly how to make good use of Anya Taylor-Joy's very huge eyes, which are like the star of this movie. Man, I don't know. Part of me wants to just be like a lunatic and be like, we should make the fifth choice old, because how many people have made a movie like Old? Come on. The Beach makes you old, people. I don't even think Old is that good, but what a crazy movie. God, just a strange, strange film from top to bottom.
I've been waiting this entire time to talk about Old. Could we talk about Old real quick, Chris?
Let's talk about Old. God, I love Old.
The first 30 minutes of Old is truly deranged, terrible Shyamalan. It's like every one of his bad habits is so front and center in the first half hour of Old. And you think, man, this is going to be bad Shyamalan. Then the last hour happens. You go, oh, man, this very quickly became good Shyamalan. And it happens so quickly. The body horror nature of Old is wild. There's some truly deranged stuff happening in this movie. The birth scene with the baby who's born and decomposes in a matter of like hours is wild. And man, every performance in this movie is weird. Every shot is weird. Every choice is weird. And it's hypnotic in its weirdness. And yes, The Beach makes you old. The memes are great. I love the dumb ending. I love the reveal of what's going on. It's so ridiculous. But the more they lead into it, the more on board I was. I cannot justify Old for the fifth slot. I can't do it, but I love Old.
Yeah, I really just wanted to talk about Old. I'm fine with it not being in the fifth spot. But God, what a bizarre movie. Like, no one in this movie behaves like a normal human being. Like, it's just, everyone just seems like they're on like this weird alien wavelength. Like, I just remember watching this. I was just like, what is going on in this movie? Like, why is everyone acting like this? It's so strange. And it's just, and he makes some really weird choices too. Like, where he puts the camera is very strange. Like, there's this part at the end where the kids who are now adults, like, they're explaining what happened to them, and like the camera is not focused on them at all for some reason. It's so odd. It's like, what are you doing? I don't understand this. But Old.
I remember reading an interview with him, or an interview, a quote from him somewhere after I watched this. He described that his main influence was the 70s output of Peter Weir, back when Peter Weir was making experimental low budget films in Australia. And that clicked for me. I was like, oh, this is him doing Picnic at Hanging Rock, which is just, M. Night Shyamalan's Picture of the Hanging Rock means that he maybe is trying to bite off more than he can chew. But man, I love that he's trying to do that. I love that M. Night's like, I'm going to make my 70s Australian art house film about a beach that makes you old.
Yeah, the ending of this movie is really where it all just kind of fell apart for me. I appreciate the sort of brazenness of the storytelling and like, yeah, some of those body horror moments. But the ending really, really just took the wind out of the sails of the movie for me. So
it tries too hard to like explain why everything was happening. And it's like, I feel like the movie just didn't need that. Like, we don't need an explanation. Like, they're working on medicine. They're like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. I actually haven't seen The Visit in its entirety. I feel like I've seen a few minutes of it here and there. But do you guys think that there's a case for The Visit being the fifth slot over Split or Knock at the Cabin?
I feel like you can make the case because it is his big comeback movie. Like, I saw The Visit, and The Visit is a lot of fun with an audience. Like, I saw it with an audience, and they just were eating it up and just like hooting and hollering when I saw it. And it was a big risk. Like he completely financed that movie himself. He put his house up, and that's how he paid for the movie, because he had become like sort of like box office poison at this point. And it's kind of fun that like he took a risk and it paid off. Like he's back, and you know his name is all over the trailers again. So you could sort of make that claim. I don't know if it holds up. The Visit is a lot of fun. It's a very enjoyable B movie about how old people are scary.
I'm fine putting it in there because it's so important to his career. But
I feel like we should do Knock at the Cabin. I feel like Knock at the Cabin is a really damn good movie. I feel like that should be the fifth one. And we haven't talked
so
about
it. So we're sunsetting The Visit. I agree The Visit should not make the top five, even though I do like it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do that. Let's knock that out. Let's at least have the Knock at the Cabin conversation, and maybe we can decide at the final moments whether or not that tops split for the fifth slot. So go ahead, Chris. Speak on Knock at the Cabin.
I mean, Knock at the Cabin, I feel like, is actually one of his like visually most interesting movies. The way he shoots this entire movie is like hypnotic in a way. The very first scene where Dave Bautista meets the little girl, the way it's shot, where it's like pointing up at him to like sort of have him fill the frame in this, like to convey how huge this guy is. And but then the way Dave Bautista plays the character in this almost like gentle, likable sort of way. And it's such like a fascinating movie. It's strange. It's disturbing. I don't know. This movie just really worked for me. I haven't revisited it since I actually saw it in theaters, and I probably should. But I just remember being like really impressed with it when I saw it in theaters.
Can I be really pedantic about this movie?
Yes.
I like this movie. It's extremely well made. Batista's really good. The performances are really good. But I read the book after I watched the movie, and I think Shyamalan's adaptation is cowardly. I think it's every single choice to defang Paul Tremblay's book. And Tremblay has done some interviews where he's been polite about the changes, but you can tell that he too is also deeply annoyed by the changes. And I think that he takes a book that is genuinely spiritually terrifying, and like in a way that struck me to my core, and says, but love. And I'm not so sure how I feel about that. I like Emmett's Big Heart a lot of the time. But I think he took a truly scary book and removed its the core of why it was scary. So as an adaptation, I think it's kind of a disaster. And that's I know this is unfair. I need to judge it on its own. But to me, this is why it's personally under the rung of split for me, just because I had that baggage.
Yeah, this is tough. Because I'm firmly in team split here, but I know Chris loves Knock at the Cabin. So what do we do for this joint, the purposes of this joint list that we're trying to form here?
I think Split should be on it, honestly. Split was a big deal. Split, like as big as The Visit was for his comeback, I think like Split was even bigger. It was sort of like a confirmation that he was really back. Like The Visit was like, okay, M. Night's back again. And then Split was like, oh, he's really bad. Like he's knocking it out of the park here. What is really good. I feel like the connect. I actually like am like the one. Even though I love Unbreakable, I feel like connecting it to Unbreakable was kind of a mistake because it led to Glass, which is a disaster. Like we didn't need that. But everything else works really well. I would not be against Split making the list.
Okay, I think if Split makes it, then Split is probably the number five slot. Like,
yeah,
for sure, right?
Yeah.
Can I list the top five? You guys can tell me if this is yes or no. See if we can maybe end this right here.
Yeah.
Number five, Split. Number four, Unbreakable. Number three, The Village. Number two, Signs. Number one, The Sixth Sense.
I don't know. I wonder if you guys think that we actually should have Sixth Sense at number one. Like, of course that makes the most sense, but I think among the three of us, we're maybe more passionate about some of these other movies. So like, is it more true to the slash film spirit to go with the thing that we're like ultimately a little bit more passionate about, even though it's not the ostensible number one choice? You know what I mean? Like, is there a world in which like Signs is number one on this list? Because we all love it so much.
Yeah. I just want to be diplomatic here. I thought Sixth Sense would just be the communal favorite, but if we can make Signs number one on this list, babe, let's do it.
What do you think, Chris?
Man, I don't know. Part of me feels like Sixth Sense has to be number one because there is no M. Night Shyamalan without the Sixth Sense, but I don't know. I mean, you know, this is also our list. We can do whatever we want. So
I mean, that's a good case. That's a good point. And it's not like I would feel bad about it because I think it is deserving of that, you know, the, like I said, of the praise that it's gotten for 25 years or whatever. So it's not a ridiculous choice to put it at number one. So I don't know. Maybe let's go in reverse order. So do you think that Unbreakable should be number four, Chris? I know you're the most outspoken fan.
I don't know. Even though I've said that The Village is my favorite movie, I kind of want it to be higher. So I don't know. I you know, I'm not against it. I think that's a good spot for it.
Okay, so number five, Split. Number four, Unbreakable. Number three, The Village. Does that make sense? Right? I think.
Yeah. Let's do
it. I think that works. Yeah, I love The Village as well, but I think that makes sense. So yeah, just a number two and number one battle for Sixth Sense and Signs. What do you think, Jacob? Where do you think we should come down on this?
I mean, in my personal Signs, number one. I think Signs is peak Shyamalan. But I also think The Sixth Sense is one of the most pivotal films ever made, while Signs isn't. I mean, I like Signs more, and Sixth Sense is a bigger deal. The question is this list about our personal favorites, or the one, the movie that's the actual bigger deal? And for me, it's like I said, I'd sooner rewatch Signs, even though I think they're both are great movies. And I can go either way, so I'll let Ben and Chris say their piece.
Let's do it. Signs is more fun. It's the more enjoyable movie. So I would not be against it at number one. Like it's a lot more entertaining, for lack of a better word, than Sixth Sense.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it. I love that. All right. So number one, Signs. Number two, The Sixth Sense. Number three, The Village. Number four, Unbreakable. And number five, Split. That seems like a pretty good list to me. I think we did a good job.
Number six, Knock the Cabin.
Yes.
Yeah.
And number seven, Old.
Yes, Old.
Oh, man. All right. Well, yeah, I'm very curious to know where Trap falls on this list. Jacob, have you seen Trap yet?
I have not seen Trap. I have tickets for this evening after I'm done with work. So
yeah, me too.
It's not being screened for critics, although our own Jerry Mathai, who always declined to be on the show, even though he should be on the show, damn it, he's seen it, and he liked it. He said it's not a disaster. He says it's weird, like he expected the Shyamalan movie to be, but the fact that the studio is not screening for critics, you know, which is always a bad sign, he says it's deeply unfair to film itself. So we'll see. We'll see if Jeremy's right about that or not.
Okay, excellent. Well, I think that'll do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all of M. Night Shyamalan's movies at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a few things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. And tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.